So my first reaction was, how cute! Manstar's robot! People, have we not seen this movie before? Do not mess with titanium alloy.
Titanium alloy. Titanium alloy.
Yo, BJ Gador with the BJ Gador podcast. What an episode we have today. You know what they say? The American dream is dead. I say, not so fast. We have a true American dream story here today. Immigrant success story from Slovenia. Luca, host of ours, behind the scenes. We're going to talk today about so many different things. And obviously, this gentleman started his own gym in Slovenia, came over to Seattle, built an incredible gym in Seattle, business, nutrition, training, a former pro hooper in Europe. So we'll talk hoops today, like always, big basketball fan. We're going to go through his whole mindset of athlete for life. That's how he trains himself. That's how he trains his people. This guy is in incredible shape at 42.5, I believe. He can correct me if I'm wrong when we bring him back in here. But we're also going to talk, I'm going to ask him maybe in the middle of the episode here, if he could start an NBA franchise today. Is he picking Luka Doncic or the Joker? That's a tough question. It might be an obvious answer to some, but I'm interested to see what he says. Just recently passed the 100K subscriber mark on YouTube. Now, a very small percentage of creators ever make it that far. We're going to pick his tips on content creation tips. We're going to talk, how he built the channel from scratch. And I'm actually looking forward to some tips today, too, because I'm still trying to grow this YouTube as well. We're going to talk about the boys.
Oh, yeah.
Amazon show. And he's going to give us possibly a gym tour if he's able to towards the end of the episode. So lots of great stuff planned here. And honestly, like, very few people in fitness catch the eye of Uncle Baby Biscuits. Okay. I've been all around this space, and I can very quickly tell, the posers from the real ones. And when you look at Luca's content, like you go to his YouTube channel right now, drop the link in the show notes. It would take you 6 years to get through all of his content. And I thought I was good with variation, but like this guy might be the king of variations. 100 ways to do almost everything you can do in fitness at his YouTube channel. Wealth of knowledge, a great dude that I met about 15 years ago at a business building conference, where he and I kind of both got started around the same time. Like when this was a wide open space, the wild, wild west, the true WWW. All right, the fitness space. And before I get into introducing him, bringing him onto the show, some housekeeping issues. Number one, get a free 7-day trial to the Daily BJ app, TDBJ, ad-free access to all of my content, past and present, 1,000 plus workouts in the archives. Obviously, I post a lot of stuff here on YouTube, but I like to make it miserable for you. There's ads everywhere, okay? This is the business. You got to support the content when you can. And check it out. Link in show notes. Also, get 5 free travel packs plus a 1-year supply of vitamin D. Athletic Greens is the only supplement I take every single day. 8 to 12 servings of fruits and veggies. 75 whole food ingredients. The best tasting greens powder on the market. Plus a multivitamin. This is the 1-2 punch of micronutrition. Okay? You got to check out these books. I know some of you can read, I hope. I'm just hoping people still read. Okay? Because I made these books. They're on Amazon, the top 40 fit over 40 guide. The 40 exercises really I use the most for longevity, but obviously, I had to go with the 40 for 40 theme here. Check it out. And that this is pretty much, by the way, like a free ebook, and it costs almost nothing for print just to cover costs. And then my ultimate push-up guide, 5 levels of progression, ground zero to superhero, on the knees to advanced single arm and plyometric push-ups like Superman push-ups and everything in between. Something that the guy we have on today knows all about. It's not just the start, the finish. How do we get the stepping stones in between? The ultimate push-up guide, links in show notes as well. And then finally, where I get my gear, all the hoodies, the joggers, the tank tops, the wife lover, husband lover tank top that we, this is one of our best sellers here. Highlights the clavicle, the beautiful chest hair of a grown-ass man, okay? The shoulders, the arms. So sleevesoldseparately.com. Check it out. Luca, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm excited to be here, man. Honor, man. It's been way too long. So this is the ideal that we get to not only catch up, but riff like this, man.
Honor, man, this is great. And again, you're based in Seattle. I'm based in Palm Springs, California. We're on the West Coast, but we haven't had a whole lot of opportunities to catch up and really, talk shop. Let's try to do the best we can with it today. And, you know, you've just got like one of the most incredible origin stories that I can think of people in the fitness space, obviously coming from Slovenia. And, you know, those that know my background, my father immigrated from Tunisia, which is North Africa. And by the way, you know, Americans aren't very good with geography. So I'm going to put a little overlay just so you know where Tunisia is, North Africa, right next to Algeria, and Slovenia as well, to give you guys a little bit of that. You know, we like to keep it educational in all realms, in and out of the gym. But, you know, walk me through, okay? Like, and by the way, this speaks to who you are as a person, your character, your work ethic. Like, how did you do all of this? Like, I know this could be a book. How do we describe this in 3 to 5 minutes? Your origin story.
I mean, one of the things I'd say is you've probably seen that meme, you know, where it has like, you know, what people think success is like, that like nice arrow going up. And then you got the like little squiggly line with the circles and all crazy types of that. Yeah, that's pretty much what it was. But for me, it started in that. Well, let me put it this way. It started in basketball. But like, I really want to start with a book and an analogy because it's important. So there's this book called So Good They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport. It was a Steve Martin saying, and I loved it. And I read the book. It's excellent. I think everybody should read it. The reason I say it is because, you know, when people say, it's like, oh, you fell in love with basketball. I'm like, well, no, I had a chip on my shoulder. I was a scrawny kid. I was short. I didn't get picked. And that made me pissed off. And that made me work hard, right? Because guess what? When you're, you know, I was three brothers. I mean, there's three of us. And I was the youngest. And there was a lot of that, like, you know, not good enough in my childhood. And you want to be seen, right? You want to stand out. You want to be like, hey. And that's what made me work really hard at the sport. And the harder that I worked, the better I got. When I got better, that's when I became passionate. And that's a lot of what the book talks about, which is like this passion hypothesis, right? That people think that they run into this thing that they love and then they just love it and then they do it. But the truth is, when you put deliberate practice into something and you improve, you start loving the thing more. So that's where it all started for me and how I got, you know, became passionate about basketball. And there's a whole story of basketball that led me to America. And I'm going to jump around in this storyline, but I promise it's all connected. So, but, you know, because in my teenage years, like, that's pretty much what my life was. It was like, I played a lot of ball. Like, I trained like crazy. I'll kind of give the origin story of when I started lifting, which was at 13 years old. But I also got in a ton of trouble. Like I basically was a knucklehead kid, you know, because when I was born, it was still Yugoslavia. And in 91, we had the war. But when I was seven, we moved to London. So my dad got a job in London. We lived there for 4 years. And then he lost his job because the economy came. So we came back. He stayed there. And that's when kind of like we kind of came back right around when the war started. But, you know, thankfully, the war in Slovenia was the shortest. And it was the least, or should I say, it was the best of the worst, I guess. You know, when it was like Croatia, Bosnia, that was really, really, really bad down there. And so I was, you know, that was part of it too. It was like, for me, it was like ball and a lot of street stuff. And I still to this day say, if I didn't have basketball, I don't know where I'd be. Probably wouldn't be a good place. But I got really, really into it. And my mom opened up. So when we came back, my mom went back to work at the bank. And so half the day she worked at the bank, the other half she worked at the gym. So her and her friend started a gym. And it was this little, it was on the top floor of this physical education building, like, I don't know, 2,000 square feet. It was like a membership gym. And, you know, I started going there and lifting and not really knowing what the hell I was doing, but got really fortunate because one of the top power lifters in the country trained there and showed me a lot of stuff. And this, again, you know, I can only say like this, I was fortunate. At the bottom of the building, there's two guys that trained. One of them was Aliash Pagan. It's a hard name to say, but he was 5-time like world champion in the straddle gymnastics. We're talking about Olympic level, best in the world for years. And they'd come up there too and show me stuff. So, you know, now I got like these I would say athletes that I look up to. I'm like, wow, you know, and they're showing me stuff. So I started training like pretty hard and doing stuff. And where the dots connected for me is that I got bigger. But then I got stronger, I could jump higher, and I could tell on the court. Now these guards, when I'm putting my, you know, my body on them, like they can't hold with me, I rebound better. All of a sudden I can touch the, you know, well, not at 13, but 14, 15, I'm touching the rim. And so I really connected the dots of like, wow, like performance training helps me with basketball. And then I got obsessed with it. Like reading like publications, reading, you know, the moment that I could start reading T Nation, I read every article on it, Elite FTS, every article on it, like, you know, bought the DVD, like everything. I mean, I don't know if you remember, you remember Air Alert?
No.
So Air Alert with this was program, which was dumb from a scientific standpoint, but you know, I'd do anything I could to jump higher. And then the Soul shoes, I know you remember those, where you would step into them and stand.
Okay, strength shoes?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I would get like, I would do all of that stuff. But what it really did is it took me down a rabbit hole of performance. Right now, at this point in time, if you ask me, do I want to be a performance coach, strength coach, you know, trainer? No way. Like all I cared about was like the performance side of things to make me a better basketball player. But, you know, and connecting back to that book, So Good They Can't Ignore You, I was doing deliberate practice already in the field of sports performance. And so, you know, I ended up running into a lot of trouble, especially my 17th year of life. I mean, very much so. I was deep in, you know, crime, like selling drugs. And I ended up deciding to go to the U.S. Now, how this happened was that our Slovenian basketball team went to Eastern Invitational Basketball Academy in Jersey and was kind of like, hey, this is our experience. We're going to go play against the high school top U.S. teams. And I went there, and it was awesome. Now, I had no – because I was already playing the basically pro leagues, Division II pro leagues in Slovenia. And there was a guy there, Wayne Jones, who was the coach of my team when I played there, and I did really well. And he said, hey, man, you ever thought about going to college in the U.S.? And I was like, not really. Like, you know, in my mind, I'm like, I'm selling dope, making really good money. I'm playing pro. I mean, it's like, no, like all I want to do is play pro basketball. But because of that, year afterwards was very, very rocky for me, meaning from a standpoint of like, I really, you know, our phones were bugged. Like, you know, it was, let's just say that there was stuff that happened in the streets that was like do or die-ish. And it made me really realize like, shit, like this is, you know, this could go two ways. And my coach in Slovenia said, hey, man, I know what you're doing. Like, I, you know, I love you. And like, dude, there's only two paths here. Right. One path goes to not a good place, jail, dead, this, that, the other, you know, and the other you can choose and you can have basketball and you can have, you know, school and you can do whatever you want to do. And it really made me think. And Wayne kept in touch with me that whole year. I said, hey, why don't you come up and see me in Denver? We'll train for 2 weeks. Then we'll go to Eastern Invitational Basketball Academy, you know, two of them. And I was like, all right. So I just kind of went for it, pulled the trigger. I went up there and I did really well in the camps. Now, I have zero idea how college works as far as scholarships and stuff goes, right? I'm just showing up. It's like mid-July, right? Not knowing all scholarships are gone. But, I play really well. And I, you know, Quinnipiac, Delaware State, Western Michigan, they're all like, man, we really like you. But, you know, you'd have to walk on for a year. And, you know, I didn't know, like, walk on for those schools is like 50 grand a year plus other stuff, right? So that was just not – we couldn't afford any of that, couldn't get loans, any of that. So one of the coaches was like, hey, man, I played upstate New York. And I played and then I coached. So I'm still really connected. It was a D2 JUCO. He's like, man, you're really good. I think you'd start year one. And I ended up making – you know, I came back to Slovenia and literally went to the embassy, started doing the paperwork. Very, very – pretty much – I mean, kind of – on a whim to a degree, but like I just knew in my heart, I'm like, okay, this allows me to play ball, gets me away from the trouble that I've been in, and I still get to, you know, do school essentially. And I basically packed my bags within a month. And there's a whole nother crazy story, because my first day of school, I flew in, was supposed to fly into New York September 11th, 2001. So my plane was supposed to land 20 minutes after the towers got hit. We ended up flying in the air until we ran out of fuel, landed in Nova Scotia. And I spent a week in a military camp before taking a bus back down to New York and then upstate. Yeah,
this is like a Netflix movie that should be made.
I can't make it up. So that was my journey to, you know, to the U.S. And then I did 2 years in junior college. I played in Southern Virginia for 2 years, full ride. And then I went and played overseas, Ukraine, Slovenia, NBA Summer Pro League in 2004. And I mean, the thing is, and this whole time, I'm obsessed with training, obsessed. Like, you know, in college, my teammates were like, dude, you got to write us programs, you know, like, cause I'd show up and I'd be so fit and in shape. And, you know, I was playing at 205 pounds at, you know, 6 foot, which is not normal for ball. And I kind of look, you know, when I came to the schools, they'd be like, oh, you're new on the football team. And I'm like, no, I play basketball, you know? And And it was, but I was explosive and I could run. I had really good endurance. And everybody would be like, oh, who trains you? I'd be like, well, like I geek out on this stuff myself. So that's kind of how that happened. And even like my pro, this is a crazy story. You know, when did I first start kind of coaching? I was still playing pro basketball, and one of the teams was like, hey, how, dude, you're jacked and like fast. And like, how are you doing this? I'm like, oh, I write my programs. Like, this is what I'm into. And they asked me to write the programs for the team. So, and I was just like, all right, cool, pay me a little extra. I got it. You know, I was excited about it. So that's in my last year of playing pro ball, because pro ball, you know, is not always pro sports is not what people think it is. Like, you're just rich. People are throwing money at you. I actually didn't get my last season get paid like for 5 or 6 months because the team runs out of money. And then essentially, you know, and this is Division I, right? And they, you know, they're supposed to get sponsors. And then as players will go like, well, we're going to sue you. And then the team says, well, if you sue us, we'll go bankrupt. We'll go back 2 leagues and then you won't get paid anyways. It's, I mean, there's just so much stuff that you don't see behind the scenes. And I started training people that year. I remember I was doing like 2-a-days practice. In between, I'd go to this gym called Sokol, where I was always training. So people started asking me what I'm doing. I started you know, I was like, hey, man, I could train you. And charging peanuts. I wrote an article for this, for the magazine that gym chain distributed about back pain. People started asking me to train them through back pain. All of a sudden, you know, I'm training in the morning, coaching people for 4 or 5 hours, going back training again in the evening. And then we had a group training outside in this park called Tivoli that kind of took off, went from 2 people to 4 to 8. We did a ton of kettlebell stuff. We were doing, Pavel was one of my kind of mentors, you know, early on. I did the first RKC in Europe, 2004, if I'm not mistaken. So it, you know, that started growing. So I was basically, you know, coaching people. But the thing that I realized was that even though I was making almost no money, the feeling I got from it was phenomenal, right? And that's what kind of started taking me down that rabbit hole of, you know, maybe this could be something. And that's how we actually started the gym. I was still playing ball. I went to my brother. I said, man, look, man, we have something here. And I hired a consultant that was the top guy in the nation for gyms. You know, I kind of napkin the plan. I'm like, look, man, like, we're training people outside in the woods with kettlebells and ropes and kegs and in the trails. So there's pull-up bars and this, that, the other. And I'm like, I'm training people out of this gym. And it's growing, man. Like, there's something here. We want to open up a coaching membership gym, right? And the guy's like, oh, I love your enthusiasm, but it won't work. The reason there's no gyms like that is because there's no market for it. And obviously, I disagreed with the guy. And then we ended up, you know, we opened up, it was a 470 square foot room. So I couldn't even call it a gym, really. And it essentially, from there, about 6 months later, we went to 2,200 square feet. And I ended up moving to the U.S. because I was married. So it was kind of like we were living long distance, which wasn't working out well. And so I decided to move because it was easier for me to go there. But that gym, so that was 17 plus years ago is when we started that, basically that bigger gym. It went from, you know, 470 square feet to 2,200 to 4,000 to 10,000 to now, you know, it's our fifth location, 11,000 square feet. We've been around. I mean, we are the staple of, you know, coaching and sports performance in our country. We do the most continuing education out of any gym in the country. And we got 550 members currently. We train everything from Olympians to EuroLeague soccer players to, I mean, you name it. And when I came here, I basically had to do a reset button because I started from scratch, zero, nobody knows me. And I started working at LA Fitness, you know? So I kind of had to go through the journey again where I'm LA Fitness, went to Vision Quest, developed all their programs, and, you know, 2 weeks ago was actually 15 years of Vigor here. So, and we went from when I, you know, 900 square foot garage, 4,700 square foot gym to me buying a 12,000 square foot building and completely redoing it. And we have 7 tenants because the gym is the tenant, obviously, but then we have physical therapy. We have a smoothie bar, acai bowl place. We have med spa. We have a nail salon. We're adding in a DEXA fit business and a fire and ice. So, I'm trying to compact this story as much as possible, obviously, because there's, you know, along that way, there's so many routes to go. And you know, I'm a very, very, you know, Hobie-like person, you know, like I'm obsessed. If I'm into a thing, and I commit to a thing, man, like it's I'm reading everything about it. I'm getting every course. I'm all day. It's like it grabs a hold of me, and that's what it's been. And you know, we'll touch on kind of the social media and the YouTube and everything, and like how that happened, because that was never really a primary goal. My first 10 years in this industry, man, I do two things. You know, I coach people all day long, every person, like group, semi-private, one-on-one, like you name it. And but when I started the gym, I run the gym, right? Like that was 10 years of very, very obsessive focus on that before other things started to happen, right? People would go like, hey, how are you running your business? And, you know, that's how we started doing business coaching, me and Steve Krebs. You know, so many people would start asking. I'm like, okay, well, let me try this out and see how it goes. And then I did well with that, helping other people grow their gyms. You know, the moment that, and we were taught, like when we met too in Pat Rigsby's group, it was, you know, we were kind of ahead as far as like, all right, look, we're writing blogs and we're writing emails, right? So I've been doing that for, I mean, 15, 16 years now, educating. And then once video started becoming more available, right? And you didn't have to have this better tech and didn't need, you know, so many editors and to spend so much money, right? Like you do it off your phone. I started picking that up, but really all of it was just me sharing the things that I'm doing, right? It's majority of the stuff that I put out is just like, hey, I do these things. I'm going to share them with you. You know, maybe it's more documentation than creation. There's definitely some creation there too, but that's the philosophy, right? Is like, you know, become exceptional. And going back to that book, why I started with it is like, you know, become exceptional at something that delivers a ton of value, you know, and to the marketplace, to people that you serve. And then share how you did the thing, right? That becomes the content stuff, right? That might have been the shortest that I've ever kept it. Hopefully, that was a good summary. But yeah, but here we are today, and there's a lot of stuff going on.
Look, man, I mean, you're obviously an all-in, hyper-focused Terminator type of cat, and that there's no way you would have achieved what you've done at the age. I mean, 42, 43. You know, obviously, it's old for pro athletes, but I mean, you're really just finally figuring out who you are as a man, just kind of getting started, really making wealth and having impact. So I've got a bunch of follow-up questions. I'm going to first start with, you know, what position you play, like what would be the scouting report on Luka Hosovar? And then also what made you fall in love with basketball? Who were your NBA or world player idols growing up in basketball?
I mean, for sure. Number one, I was naturally, I'm a shooting guard, right? Scouting report on me is like, don't let that dude shoot. But the thing is because I was strong and physical and explosive, you know, I do good like slashing and creating. So it was, because when I went pro, you know, you go to European leagues and like I played for Himmick my first year. I mean, that, you know, the point guards are 6'5". Here I am 6 foot, right? So I shifted the point guard position, and I can honestly say that's not my best natural position. In college, I play the two, you know, and I can create. I love playing off screens, but I'm a good spot up shooter. I can come off screens and shoot. I can create my own shot. That was my thing. I mean, I was like, I think number two highest percentage shooter in D2, one of the years on from three. I mean, I was like, I think I was like half year through the season, I'm like shooting 53%. It didn't hold up, but I mean, I could shoot lights out, man. And my inspiration, I think in that era, I mean, if Jordan wasn't an inspiration, you're out of your mind. I'd get up at like, you know, when I was in Slovenia, I'd get up at 3:30 in the morning to watch the games, because that's when the playoffs were and the finals were and everything else. But also a big, you know, because I was crazy into hip hop. We even had our own hip hop group. Again, we could listen. It's going to veer off to different places. But so Allen Iverson was just like such a big inspiration. I think part of it too, because it was like, it is, you look at him and you go like, that person should not be doing what he's doing, right? Like, and I've stood next to him, like he's shorter than me, and you know, 165 pounds, like with a wet shirt on, you know, and he had heart. And we could have like the fun around the, like, you know, practice, we're talking about practice, coach, you know, but man, when he played all out, and that's what I love. He put his body on the line. He's incredibly talented. He had a chip on his shoulder, so he was definitely, I would say, a big inspiration. And kind of, you know, I don't want to say I play like AI, but AI could shoot. He was a little bit of a streaky shooter, but he could shoot. but he could attack and slash and get to the bucket. I would emulate a lot of the things that he was doing. And so those were probably my top two. And I mean, from Europe, I guess I have to bring this up, because for us, this man was a god. It was Drazen Petrovic. For anybody that goes back, you know, and he died, unfortunately, very sadly, when he was very young. He had his best year with the Nets. He was number one three-point shooter in the league, averaging 22, 23. Phenomenal. I mean, he's a legend, absolute legend in the Balkans and just in Europe. So he was a huge inspiration for me from here. But then looking to the NBA, it was definitely Jordan and Allen Iverson.
Wow, man. I mean, it's were you also like, were you watching, because I've heard a lot of European players, like, it was the 92 Olympics when the Dream Team came through and just like they were beating teams by 50 points. I think one of the games was like 70 plus points. Was that a big influence too, like seeing those?
Oh, 100%. So the 92 Olympics, I don't know if you remember. So they played Croatia. And so the Dream Team played Croatia in the finals. Drazen Petrovic had like 28 or something like that. I mean, he's gonna get his. But I remember, so these things are so clear to me, I could dive into it. Right before before halftime, it was close to halftime. If I'm not mistaken, Čutura, which was the center for Croatia, like dunks it, and Croatia goes up, right? And then the Dream Team goes into halftime, I think, leading, but just by like 4 points or something. And then they ended up winning by like 20 something, right? But you know, basketball in the Balkans. So when you look at the Balkans, right, after, because before the war, it was Yugoslavia. So you got to look at Yugoslavia was Slovenia, Serbia, Montenegro, Bosnia, and then also Macedonia, right? So, and Croatia, my bad. And if you put those countries together now and made a Dream Team of the Balkans, it would be insane. I mean, insane, right? Think about, I mean, Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, Bogdanovic. I mean, you could go down the list of how many phenomenal players are from those countries in the NBA right now. I mean, basically, those two that I named are, you know, one and two maybe, or top two and top three or four for the MVP run, right? So it's, you know, basketball is definitely kind of like part of religious sport where we're from. And that's why I'm not the prototype, I'll say, Balkan player height, you know, because most of the guys are taller than me. But it was definitely a thing that I watched, you know, because back then you were absolutely 100% like the NBA is the best league in the world, right? And, you know, as time grew and obviously the European leagues developed, and now you're kind of like, well, you know, it's getting closer and closer. But I still, I love the game. You know, I always say too, in pro sport, there's parts of my career where you know, it becomes so business-like that you kind of stop loving the game. But then I'd go play street ball, and I'd love it again, if that makes sense, right? Like, it becomes too political and businessy, and you lose the love for it. But, like, to this day, you know, I love that sport. That sport saved my life. It created the journey of where I am today. And that's why I also, you know, I train a high school basketball team pretty much mostly kind of almost volunteer-like. I help out with a lot of the high schools, and because I want to be around the sport and I want to be around kids and helping them develop, you know, beyond, you know, so few are going to go to pro sports or even college full-time scholarships. But the things that you build through sport, teamwork, discipline, work ethic, camaraderie, communication, right, like overcoming adversity, resiliency, like all these character traits that will serve you for the rest of your life and that have served me, those are the things that, like, I really like to pass on and coach and develop and these kids. And again, that, you know, goes back to like what ball did for me. I think sports is such an integral part of healthy, you know, healthy human growth.
You know, one of my favorite parts of the Last Dance documentary, still on Netflix, by the way, I've watched it four times. I watch it, I think, every spring just to get the motivation I need to kind of push for the rest of the year. But when Scotty and Michael and MJ were trying to punk Tony Kukoc when they played Croatia, because there was this whole controversy about, like, you know, they drafted him, but then he didn't come over to play for the Bulls, and they wanted to kind of like check him, and they kind of did in the first game, but the second game he came back and had a great performance. And again, like, you can't punk these European players. Like, a lot of these guys, they're coming from war-torn countries, they have a level of a kind of hardening and work ethic. And obviously, I think what we saw too is like complete players, like can pass, shoot, dribble, especially the big guys. Like that was a foreign concept to America, where like you put a big guy in the post and you put small guys outside and they can shoot, and everything was really delineated. And obviously right now, like you said, two of the top five players in the game, you know, are coming from Europe, and Joker and Luka. Let me ask you that before we transition over more fitness stuff. Who would you, like, again, knowing what you know now, but also like starting in year one, who would you pick between those two guys, Luka or the Joker, to start an NBA franchise? I think some people would have an obvious answer in the current MVP, but I'm just curious, like, what your perspective is.
It's a tough one because I love the Joker, but I have a bias. I played with Luka's dad, played with him and against him, Sasha Doncic. I remember Luka being, when I was with my off seasons in a college for 2 years. So basically I would come home from college and then I would practice with this team, Slovan. Slovan also, I would play back then with Goran Dragic. He's a good friend of mine. He's been in the league for 13 years now, probably retiring. Beno Udrich, just a lot of these guys that, like, it was a crazy good generation. Beno Udrich has two rings with Spurs, Brashan Nesterovic, a lot of these guys that I grew up with and played against. And I remember Luka being at Slovan's practice, you know, he was 4 years old. And I mean, he doesn't know me because he was so young, but I'm cool with his dad. And so I have a bias towards that. To me, it's Luka, obviously. But, you know, I also want, like, Nikola Jokic is amazing, right? He's absolutely phenomenal. Two incredibly high IQ guys. And I was just in Portland on Saturday to watch the Mavs against the Blazers, because my friend is one of the assistant coaches for the Mavs, Marko Milic. He was actually the first Slovenian to be in the NBA, got drafted into the NBA. And so I went to the game, did not disappoint. He had a 40-point triple-double on Saturday. He had 22 points in the first quarter. I mean, it's insanity. You know, I had these folks sitting next to me, and they're Portland fans, and the lady goes like, he's like, this is ridiculous. It looks like nobody's trying to stop him because he's playing at this – it just looks weird because he controls the game. He moves – I mean, he has a good switch of gears, but he got like puts you to sleep. He can euro step. He can speed up, slow down. I mean, he knows what's going to happen 4 or 5 plays ahead of time. It's nuts. It's crazy watching him. It's like poetry. I mean, if you love ball, you know, I used to love the San Antonio Spurs when they won the championships because they played phenomenal basketball. And people would say like, oh man, like they're not dunking all over the place. I'm like, if you understand basketball, this is poetry, right? They'd move the ball around. Like you'd see plays where nobody dribbled the basketball, like 11 passes, no dribbles, layup, right? It's like, holy shit. And so to me, you know, both of those guys play like that. So that's why I think my inclination is just because I've you know, there's a history and a story between Lucas from Slovenia. He has the damn same name as me. So I play with his dad. So probably that. And I think, I mean, he's not, even though he can score and he does score a lot, you know, he's not necessarily a score first player. Like they have, you know, the joke is like, if you're open, they'll find you. And there's a stat that like he has the highest, I think they rank it like in a ratings thing, where he finds people that either it's a layup, a dunk, or they have like a certain amount of time to shoot it. Like they're wide open. Because you got to double him. Like, you know, they weren't doubling him in the first quarter. He had 22. They start double, triple teaming him, and then he's finding you, period. So I would say Luka because of that, but I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with either or. And also, I think Luka will have a longer career. If you know Nikola Jokic, he loves horses and horse racing. You know, he goes back to Serbia, Belgrade, and, you know, watches his horses and doesn't play much ball and comes back better, which is crazy. So I don't think that he'll be in the league by choice as long as Luka will.
I mean, Luka was also he's been better at a younger age than the Joker. And like you said, he's also a showman. Like he wants to really, I think, leave his mark on the NBA in a way. Like you said, I think the Joker is just counting the days, you know, so he can get out of there and just, you know, because he has no interest in the extracurriculars that come with being a professional athlete in the States. And I get that. Again, it's, you know, so you just want to play basketball and you want to go and spend time with your people.
Here's a funny story, right? Because like Luka's been trying to convince him to, like, you know, get on Instagram and their account, social media, because he can make millions and millions and millions of dollars promoting stuff, having collaborations, whatever, completely not interested. Which, by the way, like, I think there's a lot of lessons there, positive lessons, right? Where he really disconnects the sport with life, family, you know, he can really turn on and off, right? And I think there's a beautiful lesson there. But also, you know, and I think he's very an outlier for sure, because he's not as obsessed with the game, right, as some other players are. But it just shows you that, you know, success comes in many forms, and you can't just lock in on one, you know, there's only one way to do this. I would disagree. And the world shows you that, right? Like, just like business, you'll have somebody goes like, I get up at 3:30 a.m. and do my thing. You know, like, I've always been more of a night owl. You know, you'll find, again, people that do things in different ways and are successful, and that's perfectly fine.
I've got on my wall, you know, I'll paraphrase it, you know, a classic Buddha quote that, you know, success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success. And that's what it's all about. And I think, you know, we both have mapped out some really unique lifestyles in the history of the world, like stuff that our parents would just like, couldn't have even fathomed.
Yeah.
When we're growing up. And again, a lot of it was because of the sacrifice that they made. But, you know, we took that same mentality and applied it to what we were passionate about. So, you know, you talk about obviously the influence of basketball, et cetera, but, you know, you're working with athletes, but also, you know, general population, general fitness too. Talk to me about your mantra, athlete for life, and how you try to instill that in the people you work with. Because again, I think in the States in particular, it's all about quick fixes, trends, mostly about weight loss, you know, than about getting good at something or developing skills. So, you know, obviously you've had to kind of flip the script on people and get them to focus on what really is most important, which is instead of focusing on losing, which is what, like, this is kind of what it's all about in this culture. It's no gaining. What can we gain in the gym? What can we gain through good training? So take me through that.
So a couple of things that you said that really stuck out at me that I wanted to kind of shine a light on. You know, you said skills, and this one of the things that I try to do with everybody, meaning, you know, whether it's the Super Bowl champion, Cy Young Award winner, or if it's Susie that's a teacher and wants to feel better and be healthier and lose weight and drop body fat, is I talk about skills and I talk about practice, right? Because in this, you know, this term of skill power over willpower, right? That we want to develop skills over like, hey, I'm going to have willpower and just make this happen because I really want it. And when you look at sport, it's like, that was it, practice. Oh, I want to get better at, you know, my left-handed hook shot when I go in and over these, you know, seven footers. Okay, well, can you get better at that without practicing it? Nope. First, you practice it with nobody there, right? And you get better and better. And then you go a little bit further away, and then you have somebody start defending you, and you have somebody defend you with a broomstick, right? Like, and so I kind of break that stuff down too, is, okay, well, we got to start practicing having, like, eating less food. Now that can come through different ways, whole and processed foods. Okay, we're going to hit a certain protein number. Let's build the skill set up, because you want to build skill sets that are going to help you achieve the goals that you want, whether it's fuel, perform, look, right? So that's one of the things, is that skill side of it. The other is we focus on performance. Because what I found is that, like, if we focus on performance, usually the rest of the stuff comes along for the ride, right? We build muscle, we drop body fat, we drop weight. Because performance comes in many, many different formats, and I attach it to what people want, right? Hey, I want to, you know, trap bar deadlift, double my body weight. I want to do a chin-up. I've never been able to do a chin-up. I want to be strong. But guess what? To do a chin-up, yeah, you got to get stronger, but dropping body fat is going to really help you with that. Dropping weight is going to help you with that. Right, which means that, like, eating better and eating more in alignment with your goals. So I found that, like, you know, the most successful clients over the last, and it, you know, this is a real number. At Vigor, we've had over 4,200 people that we've coached to results. You know, in Slovenia, it's probably more like 8,000. We're over 12,000 because we have more members there. It's a little bit of a different model. But you would see this correlation of, like, when we focus on progressing performance, right? And of course, we're tracking things, whether it's the InBody, whether it's, you know, specific things for some people, you know, calories, which I'm not the biggest fan of, and most people don't enjoy that. We can touch on that. But we have feedback loops, And then we just keep adjusting and we work on skills and we work on performance. And, you know, we get to where we want to go. And the key is that if you work on skills and behaviors, you end up keeping those, right? Like if you do something for 8 weeks, you haven't developed skills. Let's be real, right? Maybe it's like you've had, you took some temporary motivation, went hardcore, but you didn't do something sustainable, right? You can't, oh, I'm training 7 days a week. I'm going super low carb and low calorie. You know, okay, cool. You're going to be able to do that for forever. No, you know, okay. And there's, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong in having catalysts and stuff, but the whole idea of like the athlete for life, there's two ways that it happened. It happened through this mentality that I just explained. Skills and practice and performance are going to get you to your goal. And the other part of it was that, like, for me, I always wanted to be able to do stuff, right? Like, okay, let's say I got a six pack and I look good, but then, you know, I go sprint in a flag football game, boom, there goes the hammy and a calf, right? I want to go for 8 mile hike, can't make it because I'm completely gassed, right? I don't know, granddaughter runs up to grandpa, kind of throws him off because she jumps on him and he's got to turn and catch her and boom, there goes the back, right? And I can do a million examples like that where people want to be able to do stuff. Every single person in our gyms here or in Slovenia, if you said, hey, are you completely fine with like losing weight, looking great, but you know, your hips will hurt, your low back will be tight, you can't go for a sprint or run, you can't do these activities. And they'd be like, no, of course not. Like I want to feel better. I want to be healthier, right? I want to be able to do more stuff. Like, oh, what do you want to be able to do? They're going to give you a fill in the blank. It's going to be different for different folks, right? I got a client, Tim, 55. He had two knee surgeries, cancer, and a tumor taken out of his neck. You know, wanted to get back to like playing soccer that he loves to do on golf. And man, like he's fit as, you know, crazy fit at 55 now. The doctor said he won't be able to do it. Another client is Dennis with spinal stenosis. You know, when they literally drilled through his spine, guy was like, hey, look, you're probably not going to play sport with your kids. You won't be able to sprint. And he can't, you know, and he was able to. We're able to do that. Everybody wants to be able to do stuff. Sure, there's the look part of it, which I absolutely will never bash, because if that helps you feel more confident and kind of changes the story about you, and 100%, that's an important factor. But that's why, like, you know, Athlete for Life is like how to look, feel, perform more like an athlete without the aching, you know, aches and pains in your joints, which I think a lot of people associate with, oh, if I play sport, I'm going to be aching. Well, you don't have, you know, we're not going to take a pro athlete training session and make you go through that. We're going to adjust it to where you are. But the reality is, you know, we're all athletes for life. And also, I think that if you believe in, you know, because beliefs drive behaviors, that if you believe that, you behave differently, right? If you're 62, I'm like, man, I'm still an athlete. Like, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that. And I'm going to train so that I have the ability, right? So that I'm able to do that, that I have the ability to do that. It also gives you a much, much better perspective and intent. So that's, you know, and when I was started sharing this, people resonated. That was the other thing I think that really kind of triggered the Athlete for Life, just the name, was I would share my training and be like, hey, man, like, you don't use it, you lose it, right? So I'm doing hops and sprints and jumps, but maybe you don't start there. Maybe you're going to start with some med ball throws. Maybe you're going to start with some foot fire. Maybe you're going to start with some sled sprints because it's going to slow you down a little bit. You know, Susie Sue might just do something, you know, hey, I'm going to have you start with a certain power output on an Airdyne bike for just 8 seconds. Just want you to push as fast as you can. Let's see where we can get, you know, and over 4 or 5 months, she goes from 100 watts to 400 watts. Imagine what that does for her, right? Holy shit. Like, yeah, you're 4 times more powerful than you used to be 4 months ago. Now they start believing, like, hold up. Everybody told me when I age, everything goes backwards. It's like, no, like you can change it. Like you can continue to improve. Like I always say, like, never peak, right? I don't care where you are, never peak. And so this whole, you know, and I took that from sport. I took that from basketball and then kind of integrated it with, you know, all the science and the behavior change science that helps people actually apply these habits into their life. And it's worked tremendously well, but more it's like it resonated. I think that was a big thing that, like, I'm like, you know, 42 and a half. And I'm like, man, when I'm 50, I still want to be able to sprint. I still want to, honestly, I got a little chip on my shoulder. I want to be able to, you know, beat my pro athletes in certain things. And I realized that a lot of people, I would even say majority of people, once they get that bug, and they have a little bit of a different perspective around training, they enjoy it, right? You'll never, by the way, go into a gym and, you know, find people, like if I give a 60-year-old or 55-year-old or a 7-year-old a med ball and like, or a Dyna ball, and I'm like, hey, $20 if you smash it and you break it, right? I'll give you $20. You don't have to pay me. I'll give you $20. You know, like, hey, you pissed off at something this week? All right, show me. Destroy this damn ball. And it's like, you'll see them enjoying it and having fun with it and like throwing it hard, right? Because it takes them back also to like the playing days. So it's like, how can we connect those dots and be like, hey, performance, fun, play, challenge, all go together. You don't have to ever lose that. And in the meantime, it's actually going to get you to results faster than if you're just like weight loss, you know, that can a lot of times become a bottleneck, to be honest with you. So that's kind of like the philosophy around the athlete for life is, you know, to continue to not just keep but build the ability that help you to be more athletic and do the things that you want in your life. Not just the look, but it's everything, you know, because I think there's this idea that it's all kind of discombobulated. Oh, if you want to build muscle, then you got to be, you know, to train like a bodybuilder. Hypertrophy is the number one thing. Nothing else matters, right? Like, oh, I want to get stronger. Oh, well, you got to go the powerlifting route. Like, whereas every single program, you know, and we know so much more about the interference effect. Studies have shown this now, right? Like that, yeah, we can, you know, we can train strength. We can train power. We can do conditioning. And the reality is that 99.99% of the people don't want to be those outliers and like, I want to be a, you know, world champion Olympic weightlifter. I want to be a, you know, top power lifter. I want to be a, you know, bodybuilder and step on stage and be the most jacked possible. Most people want, you know, you look at the pie chart and if you ask them, like, give me a breakdown of the pie chart, what do you want more of, right? And they're going to go like, oh man, I want to move better. I definitely want to be leaner. I don't want to put on too much bulk. Like, everybody's going to have their thing, right? Okay, so we program like that. Just like, you know, I program for, you know, pro athletes and pro teams. Think about all the stuff that we have to do with them. We're doing prehab and making sure that, you know, hit the weak links. And in off season, yeah, we're going to put on some mass that they lost during the season and build the strength up. And then we're going to kind of, as we get closer to the season, taper off, but do more power stuff. But we're going to maintain the strength. Like, there's not one thing. That's not how life is. Nobody wants just one thing. That's crazy. But yet, when you look at social media and education, you know, because sometimes it's better to be the fill in the blank guy, right? And so I see this all the time where even I'll post something. I saw this crazy example Ben Bruno gave, you know, when he's doing some putting somebody through an exercise and a muscle building guy is like, that's not the best exercise for building muscle. And it's like, but that's not even what we want to get out of it, right? Maybe we want to train acceleration. We want to train stability. We want to train a lot of different things. Like, but the, you know, the person that is kind of like, if everything you have is a hammer, then everything's a nail, right? Like, what's your toolbox? Do you understand the principles, but what do people even want? And so that's been my idea. And I've trained bodybuilders. I've trained powerlifters. I've trained such a wide a group of people that, but the majority, I mean, legitimately 99.99% want a combination of things. And then, you know, your goal is to put the puzzle pieces together in a way that kind of fits their schedule, lifestyle, preferences, you know, what's going to make them keep coming back, because that's probably the most important part is consistency. And I think that's where the magic lies, right? It's like, it's science and art. And I think Martin Rooney was the one that said this to me. It always stuck with me. It's like jazz, right? Like, you can look at the notes on a paper and they're like, don't give you any emotion, right? It's just like notes on a paper. Yeah, that's the science. But when somebody plays jazz, right, that's where you get the feeling and art. And I think that's where it kind of comes together, right? You got to understand the science, and then you got to, you know, figure out the art of getting people to enjoy it enough to keep coming back, see the results, have them, you know, help them anchor what it is that they're doing it for, and it matters. So I can riff on this a lot, man, so you can always stop me if you want to.
Oh, no, man. Look, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, one thing, first of all, before I discuss like the importance of the skill-based approach, you know, muscle mass has very little to do with athleticism. In fact, some of the most muscular people I've known or encountered are some of the worst athletes I've seen, because again, they don't have a total fitness mindset. Now, maybe they are trying to just be a bodybuilder, and that's fine. But again, I think, like you said, a lot of people that are coming to you, people want it all. They want a good blend of it all. You know, mobility, strength, power, endurance, look, yeah, but also, you know, being able to have a longevity in the approach as well. But this is where, like, and I take any opportunity I can to shit on Peloton. There's no skills involved with riding a stationary bike. You know, and that's why I was adamant about, I got to add something. What was really missing in my kind of home fitness programming is we didn't have like a skill-based cardio option, you know, besides like bodyweight exercise drills, like skater jumps and those types of things. So I wanted to learn how to box so I could bring that to them, because unlike a stationary bike where you can pedal forwards and backwards, that's it. Now, I know they do some shit off the bike, but that's not skill-based cardio. Something like boxing, all right, now you're throwing six unique punches, all the kicks in the knees, if you had the kickboxing component, both stances, all planes of motion, unlimited combinations, you know, like, so, but there's a resistance to that initially. People don't like being exposed with things that challenge them athletically. But when you get through that learning curve, and that's why, again, people don't want to teach it, because let me just give them the weight loss. We'll put these idiots on a bike. They can't fuck it up and we'll just get their money. No, like, it's all about getting through that learning curve. You mentioned at the beginning of the episode, if you want to be good at anything, you got to be willing to suck at it for a long enough period of time. And we had a lot of initial resistance. I lost members. So like, I don't want to, it's stupid. I feel like an idiot. The people that stuck with it at the end of this year, when I asked for feedback, it was really and we actually put them on a path where like I kind of wax on, waxed off them, where they learned how to do basic kickboxing by the end of the year too. They asked, the biggest request is for more boxing and kickboxing workouts. Because again, you know, it's a skill. There's an ownership. You feel good about it. It's stuff that you can express, whether it be self-defense or sharing it with your kids or you're watching. Like, that's one thing too. Like, you learn these skills and you watch a fight, whether it be boxing or MMA, and it's like you have such a greater appreciation for what you're seeing. Like, how are these guys and gals doing this? Like, you've done a little bit of that style of training. You know how hard it is, and they're doing it at this level. So, again, that's what I'm talking about, where, like, these – When you learn a skill, and then you see this very clearly in kids that did athletics and kids that don't, they become adults and they have no understanding of their body. They have no athletic abilities to fall back on when they're trying to get back in shape. And that's why it's so tough as you get older. And if you have kids, get them in some form, whether it be gymnastics or a martial art or a classic sport. It makes such a difference, not only in their character building, their mentality, but ultimately they'll have an ability to fall back on something physical, and that really helps in the process.
100%. You like, there's a saying that I have, is what's difficult is scarce and what's scarce is valuable, right? If it's easy to do, then everybody can do it and it's just not as valuable. But then there's this other part, you know, if you look at the self-determination theory, which is basically how we stay motivated intrinsically, right? There's three parts to it. One is autonomy, which is choice. Two is competence, skill, and then three is relatedness, which is community, right? So again, for us to be more intrinsically, internally motivated, if we become better at something, that does it for us. We actually don't need a reward, right? Like, even a, you know, there's been so many studies done on that like even a mouse like is more fired up when she figures out how to like get the cheese. This is true, right? Like, and so I think that we do people a disservice if we, you know, because to me, it's one of these things that like, oh, you know, you're not good at this stuff. Like, I'm just going to give you the easiest shit to do and then not make you help you get better. I think that that's doing a disservice to the client. Right now, I do think that, again, the magic happens again is, you know, if something's too difficult for somebody, to get frustrated. If it's too easy, to get bored. So that, you know, I forgot what it's called, but it's like the
Goldilocks theory.
Yeah, Goldilocks theory, exactly. Like about 5 to 6, 7% harder than what they're currently capable of. And I take all of that stuff when we do training, and I'm talking about even classes, right? I'll add one to two at most new exercises that might make people a little bit frustrated. The rest are going to be similar, meaning movement patterns that we all know, right? And then they get it. And I break it down, like you said at the beginning, you have to be really good at breaking a complex skill down to its parts. And then I teach that so that people can be like, oh man, that was challenging, but I was able to do it. Boom. Right now they put a vote, like they built their identity up a little bit more because they're like, oh, I overcome this difficult thing. So I think that that's part of our role when it comes to, you know, coaching. It's like we help people build skill sets, and we got to find and fine tune. And, you know, that's one of the things I become really, really good at is like big classes, small classes. You know, I got 40, 50 people and I'm coaching, you know, that person this way, that person that way, that person this way, moving around, sweating bullets, coaching my ass off, because everybody's a little bit different, different coaching cues, different toolbox, different perspective. And you make them a little better. But that's the thing. They build competence. They're building intrinsic motivation. Sometimes it's choice, you know, autonomy. Hey, do you want to do a front squat? You want to do a double kettlebell squat? Man, I think double kettlebell squat. Cool. We're doing a front, I mean, we're doing a squat pattern. They chose what they want to do. So they're more committed to the thing they choose. We know this from science, right? And so being able to do those little things, and then relatedness is just community, right? Support from the coach, from other people on a journey just like them. So when we connect those dots, and I remember, I mean, I did a seminar on these three, right? And like how they show up in like our gym. Competence, autonomy, relatedness, you know, how you can plug them in so that people build their own self-motivation and self-confidence up. And again, notice I didn't say 6 reps, 8 reps, 12 reps, 4 reps, right? This is like the behind the scenes stuff that helps people achieve their goals because they build their own self-motivation. Like it's like the person that, you know, when they started, you know, they skipped workouts, you know, it was tough for them. They kind of started and then fell off. But at a certain point in time, maybe it's 6 months in, maybe 9, maybe 12, like they become super consistent. And then 2 years later, like they're the fitness person, but they didn't used to be the fitness person, right? And it's because they built up enough of that intrinsic motivation that now they work out, even if they didn't get the, you know, I'm going to be leaner, like the workout makes them feel good. So they do it because of that, right? It's completely intrinsically motivated, where we can start, and most of us start our journey. You know, I said that I started like training. Why? Because I was a scrawny kid. I couldn't jump high. I couldn't run fast. So I trained to do that because I didn't want to be left behind. I didn't want to be that kid, right? Somebody might be like, just get out of a relationship. You know, they've lost themselves. And then it's like revenge body, you know, like I'm going to get the best shape of my life. And it's like, I'm cool. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing. Like that means that you started with some type of external motivation. Maybe it's status, maybe it's money, maybe it's who knows what. But if it got you started over time, when you keep doing it, it's going to lead to like just falling in love with the process. And that's where the magic happens, right? Because now it's like, I like the process, hard or not. Like, I know that that's where all that fulfillment lies. And it's like, even if you take away the prizes, I'm still going to be doing it. And I think as coaches, that's part of one of our goals, right? Because I can have a kind of okay program, but if somebody does it for 3 years, guess what? They're going to be fit in shape, right? I could have the best program on the damn planet. You know, somebody's like on and off. That person that's on the okay program consistently is going to do better. Like, you've been around this, so you know, right? Sometimes I've seen programs that like, damn, like this is not the smartest thing I've ever seen. But guess what? The coach engages the client enough to where they keep coming back, man, that's winning. You know, and I've become a lot less judgmental, even though I think there's ethics in this industry that a lot of people don't stick to. But, you know, to me, it's like if the goal is to get this person to feel better, move better, look better, you know, be more confident, be healthier, and somebody's getting that job done, man, like kudos, right? Like I was the guy that, I don't know, you know, 10 plus years ago, I'd be like, well, Zumba's not the best for fat loss. I'll tell you what's the best for fat. You know, it's like, that's stupid. If somebody got off the couch, started doing stuff, they're smiling, they're dancing, they're moving, man, like that's awesome. Hell yeah, keep doing that. And I remember we have a client, Bonnie, she's been with us for like 14 years. She started doing Zumba. She's an instructor now, but that got her into like activity and fitness. And then at a certain point in time, you know, she lost a bunch of weight and was like, and of course that person starts researching what else, this, that, the other. And then she was like, hey, strength training is the next move. And then she came to Vigor and started training here and started doing strength training. You know, lost, I think, 100 pounds overall in that time frame. But the point is, there was an entry point. And in fitness, too much what happens is that people shit on the entry point. Oh, you're doing this dumb thing. And it's like, hold on. This person was doing nothing, and now they found something. And maybe they found a community, and they're more active. And that should be supported. And sure, like, we could continue to debate in a non-judgmental way of, like, what's best and what the science shows and this, that, and the other. But, like, I've become much more open to this because, look, as a country, we're not healthy, you know. And it's like, if you start bashing when people do good things for themselves, we're actually not helping, right? Because we're so righteous and like ideological and no, like this bucket is the best bucket. This is a stupid bucket, right? So we can't do that. And again, from somebody that was pretty hardcore on that, like, you know, 10 plus years ago, the more I've spent time with people and coaching so many different types of people, I think that that's crazy. And like, as a community of fitness, we have to do better, you know? And again, that doesn't throw out, by the way, like that does not mean, you know, cause rule number one to me is like, thou shalt do no harm. So, you know, if you don't know what you don't know, you got to educate yourself. You know, if you're doing 100, by the way, like, you know, anybody want to call me out for this, I don't give a shit. Because if you're doing, you know, a Metcon with 100 overhead snatches with a barbell, but you know, 8 out of 10 people that come into our gym can't pass overhead flexion test, you're going to destroy their back or their shoulders, right? Like that's unethical, right? So you got to do better. And we need a lot of that as well. But there's a big difference between that and then bashing people doing fitness and activities that are actually helping their life.
Oh, absolutely. And again, like your example with Zumba, I mean, dance is one of the universal fitness methods. It's a skill. It's something that once you acquire, there's endless joy and creativity that can come from it, but a stationary bike, not so much. That was my main point with that. But again, like you said, whatever gets you started, but the one, you know, we're coming on here at the time of recording this more, you know, another year of the New Year fitness resolutions. I'm sorry. A resolution, not revolution, unfortunately, but catalysts are great, right? But here's, and again, we've all been there where we're doing something to prove people wrong or, you know, show someone up. And again, the whole concept of the revenge body. I hate to break it to you, those listening, no one gives a fuck about your body. You care about your body. All people care about is the value you add to their life. It's really that simple, people. Like, no one gives a fuck what you achieve unless it can help them. And that doesn't mean to diminish what you're going about to accomplish, but that's where it all comes to the standpoint of like, you got to do it for you. You got to figure out what makes the most sense for you. And you got to find something that you don't hate so much, because that makes it hard to do on a regular basis. Yes. You know, those yes. that are listening on iTunes and Spotify, we also have people watching on YouTube, which again, in my opinion, is where the top content creators in and out of fitness go, because YouTube is tough. You recently just passed the 100,000 subscriber level, and they send you out this plaque and they tell you like how hard this is to achieve. I wanted to kind of get some insight from you on that, like how it started, you know, maybe some of your top videos or surprises you've seen and how you've grown it, because, you know, I have a good number of trainers that are watching and content creators that listen and try to learn, but selfishly from my standpoint too, that's something I'm still chasing as well. It's not to diminish people on Instagram or other places. I'm on there too, but I spend 90%+ of my time creating content with the focus on YouTube, because it's evergreen content. It doesn't die in an hour like it does everywhere else. And it's really the only place to make a sustainable living and reach a global community ongoing. So first of all, congratulations. And do you have the plaque with you?
Oh man, I got it at home. So it's like when I work, it's kind of there in the corner of my eye. Here's the thing. So one, yes, YouTube it's a search engine, right? It's like Google. So I mean, it makes so much more. The way I look at that is that like when I create something and if it's good, it's going to be there forever, right? On social, you have to either repost it. People can't find it. You know, it's not search based. Again, not, you know, nothing against social, because I do a lot of that. But I do think that YouTube makes sense from that standpoint. I started doing it 14 years ago, and it was honestly, man, it was like, I was probably at Ryan Lee boot camp and, you know, somebody said, hey, you know, YouTube's important. But it's like, I'm training people all day. I would just post, you know, because we'd have flip cams. If anybody remembers what a flip cam is, please look it up, because it'll make you realize that they're like, what we had to do, like the process of me shooting a video and putting it on the computer was like very, very long. Let's just put it that way, right? Like now everything's so quick and whatnot. But I would just like film my workouts. And you know, if you want to laugh, because people today are like, man, you're so good in front of camera and you speak in front of 1,000 people in audiences and do the videos and stuff. I'm like, go back 14 years. You know, I was like, all right, Luca, I do hard workout. Yes. You know, it's like, you know, I'm just doing some fucking crazy stuff. I mean, crazy stuff. It'd be like my hard training sessions. And so I just kept, I got in a groove of doing that without really having any mental, like, you know, yeah, I would go like, hey, what's the best headline I should put on there? But I didn't really dive deep into it, right? But I did keep doing it. And there's something about endurance. You know, I would say like endurance over trends. You know, and it's like endurance will conquer. So I have these quotes because I just keep remembering that. Like, I just kept going. And at a certain point in time, you know, years and years in, it got to 10,000. Now, I didn't, you know, so I'm at an event and somebody goes, who here has, you know, hundreds of followers or subscribers, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000. At that point in time, I think it was like 20 maybe. And oh, I go like 20. Everybody else's hand is down except for one guy that was a YouTuber, right? And he's like, oh man, you're a YouTuber. I'm like, no, like I just put stuff up there. Like I coach people all day. Like I run gym, you know? And he's like, man, that's really difficult, you know? So he's like, that's really difficult to do. Have you optimized? I'm like, I haven't optimized shit. Like I got no thumbnails. I got no, you know, I had nothing. Like, but what I did do is I just focused on like, hey, like if somebody watches this, is it going to be valuable to them? You know, is it going to be useful? Is it going to be novel, unique? Is it going to be a novel exercise, maybe a coaching cue, like kind of sharing the stuff I'm doing and, you know, and that kind of took it there. Now that moment is when, you know, he was like, dude, you got to understand, like, there's so few people, like there's people that literally try to do this for a living and don't hit this. Right. And it made me go like, damn, okay, I want to put more attention into it. And I did, you know, I would block out time where I just work on YouTube stuff. By the way, my week is insane. You know, like I'm all day, you know, I'm coaching 25 hours a week still. You know, I got four businesses now that I run. Like, I mean, it's bananas. And, but in my calendar, it would be there. See, the thing is, I have this analogy. It's called the watch and the wallet. Right? You can tell me what you're committed to, but by looking at your watch, which is your calendar, like what your schedule's like, and wallet, where your money goes, I know what you're committed to. So you can tell me this, but this is what's the reality of it. So it started being like, okay, on my watch, in my calendar, I'm going to put content creation. It's going to be for YouTube. Oh, this is where I'm going to upload it. And, you know, let's start doing some thumbnails. And by the way, this wasn't like phenomenally good, but I did do some. And so I started basically, you know, that was like, oh shit, this is making a difference, and started growing faster than it was. And of course, when you see progress, what happens? It gives you a little more motivation, right? And so that's exactly what happened. And it kind of like, honestly, I just locked in. And the long game is such an important factor here, because I was just like, I have no short term, you know, I only started having 100,000 subscriber goal once I was like, oh shit, I can make this happen, right? Like, because over COVID, it definitely grew significantly more. And I was doing lives, like we were doing charity boot camps, and I was going live with nice cameras, and people from all across the world would just tune in. You know, so that definitely bumped it up. It was all free, obviously. And then I started going into finer details. Okay, you know, do we split test some thumbnails? Because you could legitimately have an old video that did decently well, but you don't have a thumbnail, or you have a crappy thumbnail and you change it, and all of a sudden you get this massive boost and you could change headlines. Sometimes I go back and go like, man, this is a good video. I think it could do better. And I'm like, yeah, the headline could be better. And then I play around with the headline and then make another thumbnail, right? But I want people to understand that at the foundational level, let me just kind of try to zap out 10,000 foot view of what, like where my process and my mindset comes from. I think about it and I go like, is this so good that people would want to pay for it? You know, and it's like, that's kind of the stuff that I try to create as much as possible. You know, I realized that like list exercises always do well. So that just kind of became like a, you know, some people would make fun of me like, oh, here you go. Like you do all these list exercises. I said, listen, those list exercises, some of them hit a million views and more because people like ideas. But what happens is that then they go and look at my channel and look at other stuff and go like, damn, I like this guy, subscribe. So it's almost like a front end offer, right? Like I got, you know, 99 of the best bodyweight exercises, by the way. And straight up, like sometimes I would go when you were with Men's Health, I'd go and see what Men's Health did. And I see like what killed it for Men's Health. And then I just do more exercises, like straight up. You know what I mean? Like you could literally, I could tell,
like I put out a 72 bodyweight cardio exercise video that got 48 million views in 24 hours. And then, you made like 100.
Yeah, 99. And it's like, because I had this kind of theme of like, I got 99 problems, but, you know, Bitch Ain't One was like the song. And then I started playing off of that. And I did a bunch of videos with 99, right? And I played around with it. And basically, you know, it's like, I learned from Ryan Dice. I've been a digital marketer mastermind previously. And he was just like, look, man, if somebody's done something like blog posts, right, for example, right, just go more in depth, make it better, put more templates, put more infographics, put more quality videos in there. So I was just like, okay, well, let me see what's done well and like what's my kind of ballpark, what I love doing, what I'm good at. You know, mobility exercises, that exploded because I had a horrible back injury. So I do a lot of mobility to stay good with my hips and my low back. And that always like exploded. So I started doing those and those took off, right? But again, I also, part of that like watch and wallet, what I would do on my calendar, and I still do, like I research. So I'll spend 2 hours on a Sunday and I go like, hey, let me go look at some videos, like what's killing it. And the thing is, sometimes it's not, it's more for headlines and thumbnails and ideas to then make it my way on what I want to do, but it does give me the creative juices, right? And so that, and then I have a notebook. I mean, I have an Evernote, but I really like just writing stuff out. And I just have a shit ton of ideas. I mean, like straight up, I could show you right here. You know, I came in the other day and I did 7 YouTube videos with a guy that comes in. But before he came in, like I literally have like the thing outlined, right? Like, what are the things that I'm going to shoot? What are the bullet points? What are the exercises? Oh, I'm going to talk about the 5-5-5 method. You know, sometimes I'll go and look at some good articles that were written, but then turn those into a video that, because, you know, there's certain topics people like to see. When it comes to training, it's like reading about it is cool, but like they want to see it. How do I coach this? How do I do this? How do I, you know, plant my foot? What are the coaching cues that you're using? And so those are all great ways to be able to do that. Now, you know, me and Ben Bruno always talk about this, is that like the reason why I have a lot of creativity, or should I say a lot in my head, is because I'm always training people, right? Like every single day I coach, I train myself. I train, you know, I might have a group of 18 for small group. Then I got the rugby team with 42 guys. Then I go with 33 JV and varsity for Bellevue basketball. Then I got like 12 semi-privates in, you know, 2 hours, and they're all from different walks of life, right? So I'm constantly seeing things like, oh shit, like I noticed that in that lift, almost everybody does the wrong thing this way. Let me do 3 coaching cues on how to correct that. Boom, go, right? So it's like that analogy of like doing the research, making sure you're writing stuff out when you have ideas. Always, 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 always get in the habit of that. Watch and wallet. Like, you're not going to improve something if it's not in your calendar. And also, like, you know, the wallet part is, at a certain point in time, I started spending money on edits, on this, on that. Like, and by the way, like, you know, I still spend more money on YouTube than I make. Now, has it opened up a lot of doors? Absolutely. Has it made me money in other ways? Absolutely. You know, I'm launching an ebook tomorrow. I don't know when this is going to come out, but tomorrow, Tuesday, the 18th, sorry, the 19th, that, you know, we're going to drive some of that YouTube traffic to this 8-week program that I created, my first kind of like, you know, end user program. And so I think there's a lot of, you know, possibilities on at that end. But the thing is, it has longevity. Like now I'm like, I'm going to reach 110,000 probably next month, you know, and then it's like, okay, let's keep building this because this is my TV channel. Like that's the way that I look at it. Right. And because of that, it gives you eyeballs, it gives you long-term audience and community. So I think it's worthwhile. But again, like depending on what you do, like for me, I've always been a coach at heart, and I'm, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, business owner. It's been a thing that I carve out time. It might be different. Like some people might be able to dedicate all their time to this. For me, it was like, this is how much time I can dedicate. And I kept dedicating more. And then now it's like, oh, well, I can pay somebody to do some stuff that I'm not good at. Right. And that can speed things up. But again, play the long game with it and just think of it like this way, right? I always am like, look, I'm a student in and of myself, but I'm a teacher. And so I use YouTube to teach. And I teach kind of 2 different groups of people, coaches to be better coaches and the end user, you know, the fitness person that wants to be an athlete for life. Like that's literally my whole philosophy. And because I'm not stressed out about like, oh my God, by March, we got to hit da-da-da. I'm just like, I want to make work that I'm proud of and I want to be consistent. And then the more consistent I get, now I want to become more frequent, right? And it's just become undeniable with the stuff that I'm putting out. And again, that's going to just continue. If we, you know, talk 3 years from now, you'll see that like, it's just like, you know, stop stopping. That's what I tell people. Just stop stopping, man. And great things will happen.
So when you got that letter from the YouTube CEO, what was the percent of people of YouTube creators that crossed this 100,000 sub threshold?
I think it's like 0.3. It's like very low. I think it's 0.3% that make it to 100,000, of maybe even less. But I mean, yeah, less than 1%.
And then, you know, 14 years, I think almost 2,000 videos or more at this point.
1,700 plus and counting. Yeah.
You're closing in. I mean, like, it really is. Like, I look at YouTube, like every video is just a savings bond. You know, you're not going to, if you approach it like going viral and making viral content, you're going to get so deflated and you're going to have such an emotional roller coaster with making the content versus just like, let me just make a really quality video that at least one person will watch and can immediately benefit from and take action on. And when you do that 1,000 times, 1,700 times, and you keep putting stuff out there, I look at it like 1,000 plus fish hooks, you know? And then collectively over time, it just keeps riding up. And so again, like there's a lot of lessons there, man. Again, it's that consistent output. It's being willing to constantly learn from the content. Like the problem with people that don't get content out, you can never learn from it. Why did it work? Why didn't it work? What could be improved? You know, you and I are both on like versions 20 plus of every piece of fitness content we've made at this point, because we can always do it better. We can always learn. And also consumer habits constantly change. Like back in the day, bro, this was like you wanted to make 10 plus minute videos. Not that you still don't want to, but like now we know that focus is a fraction of what it used to be. So we've got to be able to make a lot of quick candy-like stuff that can get people in the door. Like you said, you don't need 100 ways to do push-ups, right? Well, the thing is, casuals, they see value in terms of how many different ways you can do it. People that are actually inside of it know that, well, you end up using 5 or 10 of these variations the most that work best for you or that resonate the most. But whatever gets someone in the door to see, you know, exactly. You give them what they want to give them what they need, right? This is just good marketing. So you can shit on it, but don't hate the player, hate the game. We don't make the rules.
I mean,
make the rules.
it's like this, right? You have to consistently evolve. I look at like even the gym business and the coaching business. I mean, things have changed. I mean, when we started, it changed so much, right? Back in the day, like you could be doing your thing for 10 years. It's like, oh, I have a reputation and, you know, locally as a business for 10 years, you're fine. Right. But now, and even if you didn't evolve, you're fine. You got the name, this, that, and the other. Now that doesn't fly anymore. Like you have to constantly be like, I'm always reading up on stuff. I'm in masterminds. I'm, you know, paying people for calls like that are killing it in a certain space. I mean, I was driving on Saturday from Portland. I listened probably to like about 6 hours of podcast, and it was 80%. It was like YouTube stuff. And it was, literally, I'm like, oh, man, like, you know, I'm there taking the notes, voice memo notes that turn into written, and like about 10 different things. I'm like, all right, we got to test this out. I got to try this out. And again, like learn from people that are ahead of you, you know, been there, done that, or doing it. Like that's my whole life essentially is like in business, I do stuff and then I teach it, right? In training, I do stuff and then I teach it. And if I've done investments, it's like I just teach the stuff that I do. And I continue to push myself to be better in every one of those realms. And I think at heart, the most I'm a coach. I mean, I definitely am an entrepreneur, but it's like, man, that's the game. And the game never stops. It's an infinite game. And I think that if you have to detach yourself from the outcomes. I know it's so hard to do, but like have a goal, have a buoy in the water that's like, this will tell me I'm going in the right direction. But like do work you're proud of and put in your best effort and then detach yourself from the outcome. You know, I don't like some stuff I put up, I'm like, this shit's not gonna do well. Fucking explodes, right? Some stuff I put so much effort into it and it doesn't do as well. But if I'm like there and I'm on an emotional roller coaster, that's not helpful. You know, not in training, you know, that's not, if your emotions are driving your behaviors, that's not good, right? In business, if your emotions are driving your behaviors, it's not good. Like assess, analyze, detach, but like, you know, can you ask yourself like, hey man, did I put in the best effort that I could into this? Am I proud of this work? If you check that box and you do it for a long period of time, I promise you, you'll be happy with what happens, who you'll become, and the results that you see. Like that I know, period.
You'll never make it unless you fall in love with the process. It's such a cliche thing to say, but I have to be reminded of that constantly in what I do as well. It's again, a lot of it is just constantly retrain your mind. You got to get going here. So I want to finish off quickly with your quick take. You can just send me a quick gym video tour. I can add on this at the end for the YouTube people. Tell me quick about why you love the boys so much on Amazon, and then also where they can find out and learn more about you. And I'll drop everything in the show notes.
Yo, I mean, listen, if you haven't watched the boys, you better go watch the boys, and then you'll know why I love it. I mean, because it's gory. I think the writing is excellent. I think it's one of those things where it's like in the real world, if there were superheroes, probably some shit like that would happen, where a corporation owns them and manipulates it and so on and so forth. But I think the character buildup was so awesome. Like, you know, yes, it's gory, but I actually do think that the writing was excellent. And so is Gen V, you know, the follow-up, or not the follow-up, but kind of like the spin-off there. Gen V was great as well. And I think it's definitely my style, right? Like, you will not get bored watching that, because it's got like serious stuff. There's comedy in it. There's quality writing. There's suspense. The whole shebang. And by the way, if you like superhero shit, which I do, I think it's a different twist to it, and one that you'll really enjoy, which is what, you know, and not to give too much stuff out if you didn't watch, but the boys, but they're in there. There's something called Compound V that gives you superpowers. So I just launched, tomorrow I'm launching a program called, you know, Athlete for Life Compound V. It's an 8-week program. It's like, you know, how it looks, feel, perform better without the aches and pains of what people think, you know, and become more athletic. So it's kind of like the show on the go, aesthetics, athletics, right? And that's kind of where I got it from, because I was, and it's also got the green color is very similar to our brand logo of Vigor. So Compound V as in Vigor, be invigorated. And so that's where that is. And for where you can find me, like, look, I think Luca Hocevar, which is LukaHocevar, LukaHocevar.com. And you got YouTube channel, Luca Hocevar, Instagram, Luca Hocevar, VigorGroundFitness.com is the gym. And also I have a podcast called the Vigor Life Podcast that is very heavily oriented towards coaches. There's more stuff, but that's kind of like the gist of everything there, where you can find it.
I love it, man. Again, two quick follow-ups to that. Number one, it is a more realistic version of what would happen if there actually were superheroes. They would quickly realize they don't need to listen to humans, and they could just dominate everything. And there'd be a little bit of an evil side to it, which is really, so it's really fun and different in that way too. And again, Homelander is one of the best actors I've seen in a while. His facial acting is off the charts. You got to check it out on Amazon Prime. Luca, thanks so much for your time. I'm going to drop all the links in the show notes to find what he's doing. You got to subscribe to his YouTube channel. Those that are listening, we gave you almost 90 minutes of our time. It takes you a second to click 5-star. It takes you 10 seconds to say BJ Podcast good with a 5-star review. I don't need a full sentence. I just need those 3 words. It's so appreciated. It helps us get it out there to more good people like you. We'll be back with more. And I think you'll take a lot of inspiration from this episode today. This guy's the real deal. Be sure to follow him. He's one of the few people that I feel like I can learn from in this space. And if I can learn from him, I know you can too. Love you guys. Peace.